Good afternoon, Columbus. Welcome to Community Forum on 98.3 and 102.1 WCRSFM. I'm your host, Ralph Tillis. In today's show, we have a very special guest. He is the star of the Tony Award-winning Broadway musical Memphis, where he portrays legendary Memphis DJ Huey Calhoun, which will be playing at the Palace Theater from May 29th to June 3rd. Also, he has a new album called Simple and Gray. I give to you, Brian Finkart. Thank you for coming to the show.
Sure, man. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, no problem. So how do you like our city so far?
You know, I've been here a couple of days, and but I got to say, like, this is our 26th city that we've hit on the tour.
Okay.
And so far, I didn't know what to expect, and it was one of the best audiences we've had yet. Like, the way they responded to the show was huge. It was uproarious. It was almost comparable to when we opened in Memphis, which is pretty great. And the city itself, I mean, it seems like there's tons to do, like, in the downtown area. Like, there's plenty to do. And, you know, I wasn't sure what to expect, never having been to Columbus. But it's actually, like, a great little town. I almost regret that we can't be here longer than a week.
Okay. You know? So, what city did you come from before you came to Columbus?
We just spent 2 weeks in Dallas.
Oh, okay.
Which was hot, but great.
Yeah.
That's a sweaty one.
Okay.
That's a sweaty city. Yeah, but they were great down there, too, and it's a great theater. But this is a beautiful house. The Ohio Theater is beautiful inside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so what are you ready to give Columbus when you're on stage? I know you performed last night, but, you mm-hmm. know, as far as people who don't know about the show, what are you ready to give them when they see you tonight?
Well, this show is, you know, it won the Tony in 2010 for Best Musical, because I think one of the things that people relate to so much with it is that it's an original show. You know, there's a lot of shows out there now that are jukebox musicals. You know, it's the songs of Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, the songs of Green Day. And this is music written for the show. It's like it's its own individual piece. You know, it stands alone. And I think audiences really crave that. And I think that, you know, to get up there and do something completely original is really rewarding, to do that every day, to get up on stage and do that. And also, you know, to deliver such a great message. You know, this was it's a fictional story, but about what was going on back in the 50s. So, you know, at the height of the civil rights movement and, you know, bringing, you know, black music into the mainstream, you know, white media at the time was unheard of. And it was like, it was something that my character, you know, he's loosely based on Dewey Phillips, that the DJ in Memphis at the time, you know, he broke all the rules of, you know, playing music he wasn't supposed to play. But as far as he was concerned, he was just playing good music, and that happened to be the music that was written by the black artists on Beale Street. And so that's, you know, I like being able to deliver that message, because, you know, good music is good music. It doesn't matter who's writing it, who's performing it, and I like getting to tell that story every day.
Okay, so I seen on, I want to say YouTube, where you actually met the family.
Yeah.
So how was that?
That was a weird feeling, and I mean, a rewarding feeling. You know, I actually met his son, and his son said to me, "Thanks for bringing my dad back to life," which was, you know, I'm sitting there trying to fight back tears, you know, I'm like, "Oh, just be a man," you know, "Oh, you sure thing, man," you know, but in the meantime, I'm like, you know, really moved by that. It's something you don't hear every day, you know, to be able to, you know, bring someone's dad back to life, you know, with their characterization it's pretty rewarding.
Okay, because I seen the expression on your face when you met the family, and I knew, I just had a feeling you was actually shocked or just like, wow, you actually mean this man's family.
Yeah, I was very moved. Like I said, you know, I was trying to keep it together, you know, but it was very emotional for me to meet him.
Okay, okay. Yeah. So, did a little background. You were a stand-up comedian.
I was.
So, yeah. how much of that did you incorporate into the play?
Well, the comic timing comes in very handy, because the character is very, you know, quirky and has a really sort of rapid fire delivery. And I think, you know, having done comedy, it helps me to with some of the comic timing in the show. But stand up is something I never want to do again. It was terrifying. I mean, it's cool if you're good at it, but like I could never stand up to the guys who do that every day.
Well, I give you credit for this. You got more heart than me, because I can tell jokes to the family, but I can't tell jokes to, like, hundreds of people, especially when they're drinking. No, not me, no.
Oh, forget it, because they'll just talk back to you.
That's man.
And then you're screwed, because, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like, if you don't know how to, like, combat with an audience, forget it. They'll eat you alive.
So any hecklers bothered you while you did it?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Okay.
The worst is when you get an audience that you're just bombing in front of, and yeah. they're just not laughing at the thing you say. There's no way to win them back at that point, you know? So it's just like, you're just waiting for your time to end, you know?
Okay. So how many years did you do that?
Only a couple. I worked in a comedy club as a doorman for a few years, and that's what even gave me the idea to try it. And after I tried it, I got an agent from it, and that's pretty much when I stopped, because I feel like I got the goal that I wanted out of it, and then that brought me into the acting world.
Okay, yeah. Okay. So, if you had to choose between acting and singing. I know you could do both. Mm. I've seen your play on YouTube, and I heard some of your cuts on your album. To me, I think you're talented. If you had to choose both, I mean one or the other, what would you choose?
That's a really tough question, and I've been asked that a lot, and I have a passion for both, but there is something about writing and performing my own music that's really, it's a lot more personally rewarding because it's my own. I'm not saying somebody else's words or telling somebody else's story. I'm telling my own story with my own words, and that to me is very freeing and very liberating, and I like that feeling a lot.
Okay. Now, some people don't know that you actually did some voiceover roles in commercials. Can you name the companies you did voiceovers for?
Yeah, I've done a lot of work for AT&T. I've done a lot of work for Wendy's, LG, Trojan. I've did a lot of work for Trojan. Free deodorant, Irish Spring, a lot of stuff. Some I've been doing for years, and I still would be doing if I weren't on tour. I plan on getting right back into it in New York. It's a great sort of little supplementary job.
Hey, you know what? If that's a side job for me, I'll be happy.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man. It's a great way to pad your income, too. If you're in that world, it's great.
Okay.
So,
let's talk about your newest album, Simple and Gray, mm-hmm. your second one. Yeah. Now, I never heard your first one. I heard some cuts on your second one, and it sounds pretty good to me. So, what's the difference between your second album and your first album?
Well, there's about 5 years. There's a 5 year gap or so between the two albums, and I feel like I grew up a lot as a person between the two. So the writing has grown up also. You know, you always hope over the course of doing something you love that you're going to get better at it as you do it. So my hope is that it's better. Lyrically and musically, but also, frankly, we had a bigger budget. It's a slicker sounding production. We had better studios, better musicians. We had, 14-piece string section on this thing, and I felt like I was able to play the songs that I heard in my head a little bit better than the first album because I was a little bit confined by, money and, which is always the problem. Nothing's free, so.
Exactly.
I was a little bit held back by not having enough of a budget, but this one, we had a bit of a larger budget, so it does have a much sort of slicker, radio-ready sound than the first album.
Okay, so I did a little more background on you again, and on the second album, it was told that you was more personal on this album.
Yeah.
So, what life experiences did you have on this album?
I feel like when you're younger, you're a lot less willing to just sort of be yourself. I feel like you're still trying to be something you're not.
Right.
And I feel like over the course of those years, I sort of was, at the risk of sounding cheesy, found myself a little bit more. So it's a lot more honest. It's a little bit more, I don't write a lot about love and things like that. I feel like that's overdone. I write a lot more about just sort of a human experience, what I've gone through, and I hope to be clever and accessible enough that people will hear what I'm saying and relate to it. I write more about just feelings I'm going through and little, things in my life that I'm going through than a failed relationship I know everyone goes through that, and I'm sure that, I have written about it, and I'm sure I'll write about it again, but it's not what I focus on. I'd rather write more about a general human experience and then, have people relate to that.
Okay. So what is your goal for this album? Is it more like album sales or more self-gratification, knowing that you put the product out there that you wanted?
It's more that, because, album sales is something that's you can never predict. The music business is so different than it was, with the internet being the main way to get your music now. It's like, CD sales, it's almost obsolete, and, getting signed doesn't matter as much as it used to.
Sure.
Major labels are dying out, they're all getting extinct. So, really, the new getting signed is having a song in a TV show. Like, if you get a song in Grey's Anatomy, that's better than getting signed these days, because that's how everybody hears you, So the whole landscape of the business has changed, and since there's no way to predict that, all I can do is write the music that I want to write and play what I find, like you said, like self-gratifying, and hope that other people connect to it in such a way that it does earn me success. Obviously, I wouldn't be doing it if I didn't want to be successful at it. But at the same time, if I make it my goal to be successful, I'll end up being like all the pop artists who I generally don't like, because it's all very processed material that's just designed to get people to buy it, and it has no heart or any passion behind it. There's no soul behind it. So.
Yeah, I agree with you 110% on that, because nowadays it seems like mainstream music just wants one certain agenda out there, and if you don't like it, so what? You won't listen to it.
Yeah.
And I heard a couple cuts on your album. I'm like, wow, you know, you're really singing from the heart. So it's gonna come for this next question. What gave you the inspiration to sing? You know, did you do something in high school, or was it from the clubs, singing or whatever?
I did start singing in high school, but only because my choir teacher pushed me to. I was terrified to. I was so nervous to get up on stage and sing in front of people. I was nervous enough to get up and act, and then I got better about that. But singing was still so terrifying because I just didn't know that I was good. I didn't have any confidence that I was good at it. And even now, you know, like, I hear a lot of singers who I wouldn't even put myself in the same league as, so it's hard to put myself out there. But for me, it's all, like I said before, you know, it's kind of liberating to let myself go there, even though I feel like, oh, there's a million better singers than me out there. At least I'm singing my stuff, and it's, you know, my message, and I feel like it's, you know, something I'm passionate about. So hopefully that shows through more than, you know, just having a fancy voice. That's what American Idol's for, you know, having somebody who can riff like crazy but can't write their own stuff, you know?
Right. Yeah, because in the music industry, if you want to be successful and have long-term success at it, you have to be creative. You got to write your own songs, you know, on top of being able to sing. And one thing I've seen from talking to you today, you're very humble. What upbringing did you have? You go to church or anything? Or?
I did. I was raised Catholic, you know, and then I sort of, you know, grew up and saw a lot of flaws with that. But I'm still very much a spiritual person, and I'm somebody who I believe that humility is the way to true confidence anyway.
Right.
It's that fake confidence that people put on that I think is and unfortunately so many people fall for it, but there's sort of that put on, I got everything together, I know exactly what I'm doing kind of thing, and I don't. I'm just as clueless as the next guy. I'm just trying really hard, and, you know, and also, you know, that I've never had any kind of overnight success. I've had to hit every step on the way. That can be very humbling. I mean, you know, you get told no a lot more than you get told yes in this business, and that can be a humbling thing.
Okay.
You know?
Okay. So, you brought your guitar.
I did.
You know, we got the mics ready.
Yeah.
Can you please sing a song for us?
I will. This is, I'm going to play the title track to the I'm Simple and Gray.
Okay.
Hopefully this will sound all right.
Alright.
She has to warm up, so we're going to see what happens.
Okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is Brian Finkart playing his single off his album, Simple and Gray. Simple and Gray.
What's done is done. And I guess from now the plan is just to dodge karma as long as you can. Wear the weight of balance on my back like a bullseye, well deserved attack. I'm tired of hiding everything I said I do, I never did. I wanna be simple. I wanna get lost in the maze, the rest of your problem ways. I wanna stop dreaming, God, I just wanna sleep. I wanna be simple. Thank you.
me to the water, but I will not walk on top. No, I will not be a savior. Oh, I wanna be simple.
Thanks, wow, man. You have a great voice.
Thanks, man.
Great voice.
Thank you.
I heard a lot of soul with that too. So, who was your inspirations growing up to be a singer?
I used to listen to a lot of singer songwriters. Like I grew up listening to Billy Joel, Simon and Garfunkel, Springsteen, those guys. And then more recently, I've gotten into like John Mayer and Mark Broussard and Coldplay, Matt Nathanson, The Fray, things like that, Sarah Bareilles, that whole scene. I'm actually more comfortable on the piano than I am on the guitar, but I try to write on both instead of get out of my comfort zone, you know. But yeah, I like the guys who really write and perform and play organic music, you know, and not stuff that's overproduced and auto-tuned like crazy, you know. So, yeah.
Okay, so how many instruments can you play?
I can play piano, and I play guitar, and I play a little harmonica. Those are the three. Yeah.
Okay.
Only a little though. I'm not like, you know, John Popper from Blues Traveler. I can do a little bit though.
Okay. I don't know if I'm wrong on this, but I thought I seen you play a little bit in the Broadway show.
Yeah, I play a little piano in the Broadway show.
Okay.
Yeah. Just a little bit. It's just for one scene, but you know, a lot of Broadway shows have a lot more of that now because they don't have to pay for a band as much. You know, if you get people who can play on stage, and it makes it a more interesting show too. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is that the only instrument you play on stage?
In this show, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So is this your first play, show, or whatever?
First Broadway show, yeah.
Okay.
Sure. I've done a couple of smaller shows when I was in New York. I did the Fringe Festival there, and I did a couple of musicals there. And I've done a couple of movies, but as far as like live theater, this is the closest I've come.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's, I mean, man, live theater from city to city. I mean, does it get kind of like boring sometimes? You say this was your 26th city, so does it get like, man, okay, let's go to the next city?
Yeah, it's tough because you do 8 shows a week, and then on your day off, which is Monday, you're traveling usually, so it's not even a full day off. And you're either on a bus or a plane or both, or you know. And it's not even that it gets boring; it's difficult. You get tired, you know.
Yeah.
And also, you know, when you're doing 8 shows a week, you can't really go out and, you know, go drinking with your friends every night because then you wouldn't be able to do the show the next day. So it can get lonely, it can get frustrating, but it's also a really, it's a great way to see the country. You know, a lot of cities you've never been to, this is a cool way to do it. Like my night job is singing on stage, and then during the day, you know, I can get to, you know, see a city or come in and play, you know, which is pretty cool.
Right, right, okay. So I'm guessing you're single, no kids.
Yeah, no, none of that. I had a relationship that didn't work out because of the road, and you know, it's tough. It's tough to maintain that kind of thing.
Yeah, I understand, because I don't think I'd be able to keep anything doing that.
Yeah.
But you following your dream and you being very successful doing it, so Good luck to you, Brian.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
Thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
This has been Community Forum for 98.3, 102.1 WCRS FM. I'm your host, Ralph Tillis, and we'll see you next week.